Welcome, welcome, welcome again, and I certainly appreciate your attendance very, very much. Always good to get together, we say. I know we have some company with us. Ask my brethren to sometimes look around, make sure everyone has a bulletin, that they like one. If you didn't receive one, we'll go get one. No, somebody will. Look at there, I got 5 people jumping up already. Well, that's good. Please share. Always good to get together, so appreciate that very, very much. The title of our lesson comes from the text that was read to us. JC, the bulletins are in the foyer. It's always interesting. I was visiting with some people yesterday, and we were talking about friendship and fellowship in the congregation. There's mentioned a couple experiences they had when they were visiting while traveling across country, and they would be first time in visiting that congregation, and a couple times they would walk out and said, "Can anybody speak to you?" "No." "Anybody speak to you?" "Nobody's talked to me either." So, well, I always like to encourage my brethren, trap the guests, you know. At least somebody, I'll make assignments. Somebody say hi to them, would you? But welcome, welcome, welcome. Title lesson is Set Your House in Order. I heard the story of an older man ask a young man upon his graduation from high school. He said, "What will you do now?" "Well, I guess I'll go to college or further my education in some way." And the older man then said, "What then?" I thought for a moment, "I guess I'll get a job." "What then?" "Get married. Have children." "What then?" "Raise a family." "What then?" "Advance in my career." "What then?" "Well, I'll retire." "What then?" "Die, I guess." "What then?"
Ooh.
"What then?" "When you die." I also heard a story of a man walking through a cemetery, rather back in the country, and there was a time when they had the tombstones. They would write different messages on them. Started reading the tombstone, he came across one with this inscription. And on the tombstone was written, "Stop, my friend, as you go by. As you are now, so was I. As I am now, you soon shall be, so prepare yourself to follow me." Well, the man thought about that for a moment and went on his way, but he came back the next day with chalk in hand. And he wrote below it, "To follow you, I'm not content till I know which way you went." Kind of after death, what then? What then? Well, Amos chapter 4, verse 12, God told the prophet Amos, "I want you to go to Israel, and this is what I want you to tell them. Therefore, thus will I do to you, O Israel. And because I will do this to you, prepare to meet your God." Judgment. In our songbooks, well, not the ones we have now, but the songbook we used to have had a song that was titled, "Prepare to Meet Your God." The words of the song are like this. It says, "Careless soul, a careless soul, why will you linger wandering from the fold of God?" Good question. "Hear you not the invitation? Oh, prepare to meet thy God." Second stanza. "Why so thoughtless are you standing while the fleeting years go by and your life is spent in folly? Oh, prepare to meet thy God." The third stanza. "Hear you not the earnest pleadings of friends that wish you well? And perhaps before tomorrow you'll be called to meet your God." The the last stanza. If you spurn the invitation, you spurn the invitation till the spirit shall depart, meaning you die, then you'll see your sad condition, unprepared to meet your God. And then the chorus is, careless soul, oh, heed the warning, for your life will soon be gone. Oh, how sad to face the judgment, unprepared to meet thy God. Ecclesiastes 9 verse 5 says, the living know that they shall die. Right, you know that. Hebrews 9 verse 27 says, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. So just as we make preparations for different events in life, we need to make preparations for death. You know, even in the funeral business, they advertise and they encourage people to make arrangements before you need them, because they know you will see them at some point in your life when you die. And so they advertise and encourage to make a purchase, and they use the phrase a pre-need. Before you need us, make the arrangements. Set your house in order. By the way, just a plug, we do have a funeral director in our congregation, Dennis Everett, the song leader. If you haven't made those preparations for your earthly demise, you'll see him after the worship service. I'll get a lunch off of him, I think.
At least, right?
I did receive a flyer, too, recently from a cremation company that offered me a discount of $300 if I purchased their pre-need within the next 3 months. Maybe they know something I don't know. I don't know if I have to die within 3 months to get the discount or not, but I got the flyer. But the point of the advertisement and the point of the lesson is preparation. Set your house in order. The living know that they shall die. In this morning's obituary, in this morning's paper. Yeah. And this is just, there was another whole page and a half. This one was born in 1934. They were younger than you, Buck. This one was born in 1942. This one was born in 1951. They're younger than me. This one was born in 1949. Still younger than me. They died. 1956. The one down here was born in 1957. Younger than me. Only 62 years old. He was born in 1960. They died. 1984. And they died. The living know that they shall die. We don't receive notice from God like Hezekiah did in our scripture reading today. Isaiah 38 verse 1, Isaiah the prophet went to Hezekiah and said, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. You know, in all of these articles here, there's always a birth date and then a dash, and then the date of death. I saw this article years and years ago, a poem titled The Dash. You know that area between the birth date and the death date? I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted first came the date of his birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that he spent life on earth. And now only those who love him know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you would like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what is true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger, and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect, and more often wear a smile, remembering that his special dash might only last a while. So, when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? How did you spend your dash? The word death, put in your notes, means separation. And when there's a death takes place, something separates. I'll give you a couple of examples in your notes. First of all, in death, the spirit or the soul separates from the body. The spirit returns to God who gave it. The body remains here for burial. And many times, even in the funeral business, they'll refer to the body as the remains, that which stays here. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 7 says, "Then the dust shall return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." See, when someone dies, death means separation. Something separates. The soul, the spirit, separates from the body. When Jesus was on the cross, in Luke 23, verse 46, he cried out with a loud voice. He said, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And having said that, he breathed his last. And then Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus come and take the body of Jesus from the cross, and they place that which remained here in a tomb. When death takes place, the soul, the spirit, separates from the body. The spirit returns to God who gave it, and the body remains here for burial. A second separation or illustration of separation is that in death we have separation of earthly ties. See, while we're alive, while we're here, we're always looking forward to reunions. When we say goodbye today, we might even use the phrase, "I'll see you soon." "I'll see you at the next meeting." Or, I'll call you. "Let's get together for the holidays." There's always an expectation or an anticipation of reunion while we are alive. But when death takes place, there's a separation of all the earthly reunions. No more opportunities. A third illustration of separation in death is that in death we have separation of opportunity to make preparation for death. In Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, said, "Whatsoever your hand finds to do, you do it with all your might. For there is no work, no device, no knowledge, no wisdom in the grave where you're going." So when we die, there's a separation even from opportunity to make preparation for death. So I want you to consider these things in our lesson this morning. I'll go through these rather hurriedly. It's just a list. Number one, think about the brevity of life. These are the illustrations that the Bible uses, not every illustration, but several of them to describe brevity of life. James 4, verse 14, "Your life is a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away." In James 1, verse 10, it says, "Because as the flower of the field, he will pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat than it withers the grass. The flower falls and its beauty fades." Our life is like a flower.
1 Peter 1, verse 24 says, all flesh is as grass. The grass withers. The flower falls away. In Job 14, verse 1, man is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow, does not continue. What is our life? It's a vapor. It's a flower. It's grass. It's like a shadow. In Job 7, verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle. This swish, swish. A weaver's shuttle. That's life. Job 7, verse 8, as the cloud disappears and vanishes away, so is he who goes down to the grave, like a cloud. In 2 Samuel 14, verse 14, for we will surely die and become like spilled water on the ground that cannot be gathered up again. What's your life? Like spilled water and dries up. Psalm 90, verse 10, familiar verse. The days of our lives are 70 years or 70. And if by reason of strength are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, it's soon cut off and we fly away. No matter how old we are, we always look back and we wonder, where did the time go? Where did it go? It's the second illustration. We don't know when life will end. We just read in these obituary notices, you know, some people live longer than others. In Proverbs 27, verse 1, it says, don't boast of tomorrow. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. In James 4, verse 13, says, come now, you that say, oh, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city and spend a year there, and we'll buy and sell and make a profit or trade and get gain. Whereas you don't know what shall happen on the morrow. Don't know. And then he gives that illustration again. What's your life? It's a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. And for that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we'll do this or that tomorrow. No guarantee. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 12, the exact phrase is, for man also does not know his time, like a fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. Wow, the imagery, the language, that's what life is like. Psalm 90, verse 12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. That's right. We don't know when life will end. The last one I just put, life is not defined by material things. All the things that life gives us for this life, for here. To live successfully here. In Luke 12, verse 15, Jesus told about a man who was building bigger barns. Because he thought, oh, you know what I have today and tomorrow? I'm going to build bigger barns to store up my goods. So Jesus says, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the things that he possesses. Then put this one down, but Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 6, you brought nothing into this world and you're going to take nothing out. Everything you have will one day be left to somebody else. We take nothing with us. Nothing. Everything we accumulate is for us to live peaceably or nicely here. All that abundance is perishable. It's not eternal. So our life is determined not by what we've accumulated, not by what we've mashed together or hoarded or put into storage. In Matthew 6, verse 25, Jesus asked the question, is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Now, food and clothing are necessary. food, clothing, and shelter. We always name those three to be live safely and comfortably here. But Jesus says there isn't life more than that. If our only focus on life is what we have here, we miss. Isn't life more? Because we can't take it with us. In Matthew 16, verse 26, what does a man profit if he gains the whole world? That's a lot. You've gained the whole world. We've seen the news recently about the richest people, the billions that they have. Can't take it with them. What have you profited if you had the wealth of these richest people? What have you gained if you lose your soul? That's the question that Jesus asked. So it's a self-examination question. What if I had the whole world but lost my soul? Uh-oh. Everything I've gained is only to be used while I'm alive. In Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13, Solomon asked the question. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What's the conclusion? Fear God. Keep His commandments. For this is the whole of man. When it comes down, as we say in financial situations, the bottom line, fear God. Keep His commandments. One other poem, and I'll close with this. It's a poem I've had before Christy and I even came here, 37 years ago. I read this poem at Margaret Ackerman's funeral. Margaret Ackerman, when I came, she was an elderly lady already. She had lots of family. Lots of family. Many of them still live here in Vero Beach. The title of the poem, and she had a great spiritual influence on the family. Tremendous influence on the family spiritually. Taught them the true value of life. And they knew that. The title of the poem is, Are All the Children In? Are all the children in? I remember my mom saying, "Does Brian come in when the street lights come on?" When it gets dark, are all the children in? It says, I think oft times as the night draws nigh, of an old house on the hill, of a yard all wide and blossom starred, where the children played at will. Yeah. And when the night at last came down, hushing the merry din, Mother would look around and ask, are all the children in? 'Tis many and many a year since then. The old house on the hill no longer echoes to childish feet, and the yard is oh so still, they've grown up and gone. But I see it all as the shadows creep, and though many the years have been, since then I can hear Mother ask, are all the children in? Now here's the spiritual application. I wonder if, when the shadows fall, on the last short earthly day, when we say goodbye to the world outside, all tired with our childish play, when we step out into that other land where Mother so long has been, will we hear her ask, just as of old, are all the children in? Are all the children in? I want my children in. I want my grandchildren in. Just as when we as parents, when our children were young, come home a certain time and we ask each other, are the children in? It's time. Same thing when I get to the other side. I'll wonder, are all the children my children? All my children in. I know Margaret's waiting on the other side. If I can read into that, she's wondering, are all the children in? Prepare. The lesson was prepare to meet thy God. So that's why at the close of a lesson, You know, let's stand together and sing a song of invitation, a song of exhortation. And we're pleading and praying. Once you've heard that good news gospel message and you believe it, you're willing to turn your life around in God's side. You're willing to confess your faith before witnesses that are gathered here. You can be baptized. Then rise to walk in newness of life. Now you're in the family of God. Forgiven of sins. Hope you have the hope of heaven within. Other blessings from that one action. And then we grow. So that's the invitation. If you're subject to it, if you haven't accomplished that, you want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement, step aside me, and at the end of the song, I'll just ask.